Well, I am speaking with Dr. Suzanne Chomsky, and she has been a significant part of this transfer of awakening information from the eastern region, India, and those areas. So, Suzanne, what was it that first caught your attention about Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and some of the other Indian pundits?
Yes, well, I was 18 years old at the time that I began transcendental meditation. That was in 1967. And the truth is that I was a hippie. It was the 60s. I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And at that time, those of us who were, shall we call it the love generation, we were very much interested in Eastern wisdom and Eastern philosophy. In fact, I was studying the Buddhist scriptures. I was reading books such as Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, The Way of Zen by Alan Watts. And what happened was that I read in the book by Alan Watts that you need to find a meditation guide. Well, believe me, in 1966 in Berkeley, California, you didn't go to the phone book and find a meditation guide. Neither did you find anything related to that. So I asked my roommate, well, you know, how do I meditate? What do I do? And he said to me, well, have you ever tried to meditate yourself? So I just lay down on my bed and I kind of asked for or prayed for a meditation. And immediately I was propelled into an ecstatic state. I felt like there was a cord of energy that was rushing from the tips of my toes all the way up to the top of my head, like I was plugged into an electric socket in this energy cord was just flowing through me. And this was really quite an amazing experience, but at the time I just figured, well, I guess this is what meditation is. And soon after that, a friend took me to a meditation center in Berkeley, and I immediately was very struck by and very taken by the picture of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, which was on the wall. And it was not long after that I found myself in India on the banks of the Ganges River in Rishikesh in the foothills of the Himalayas studying with him. I ended up living in his learning institutions, his ashrams, for 22 years. Basically, that was what my childhood was, or my formative years of, you know, living in that ashram. Not only in India, but in many different places, in Europe, in the United States, in secluded areas in the Alps and other places. And I was on Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's personal staff for 7 of those years. And Maharishi was the guru of the Beatles and of Deepak Chopra.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And now his institution is anchored in Iowa, of all places. So it does seem like that spark that happened in the 60s has become universally viral.
Well, that is one of his major centers, a major university, is in Iowa, actually. And I did live there for many years also when I was much younger.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that era, you know, I remember that era very clearly, and a lot of my friends did approach it by going to the East and looking for enlightenment and insight, and I kind of veered off looking at some of the metaphysicians in this country, Joel Goldsmith and people like that. Isn't it interesting how we have somehow arrived at a point where all of these themes, all of these threads have become a tapestry that brings us back to one central point?
Well, that's a very important point that you make, and that is that truly all religions of the world, if you look at their original scriptures, they're all saying the same thing. You can find unity in all of the religious beliefs in the world, and there's much more in common than we have than differ. So, therefore, I would say that wars over religion are pretty useless and ridiculous, and that people really have a lot in common. Their beliefs are very much the same all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you were in Berkeley, did you ever attend any of Alan Watts' lectures when he was occasionally showing up there at the university?
I did not see him in person, but I did meet some of the other luminaries of the time, such as Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who ended up becoming Ram Dass.
Mm-hmm. So there was a huge impression, as well as a desire to participate that you were experiencing at that time. Then what became your vision of taking this information and somehow bringing it to a bigger audience? So when did you begin to go in that direction?
Well, when I found out that what I was experiencing in the ashram for those 22 years, even though it was a fantastic meditation technique, it was wonderful, wonderful daily experiences of meditation, I found that there was something missing in my own personal experience. And so I sought further, and I was able to find something that would help me to bring this spiritual presence, the divine presence, into everyday life in a more practical way, not just when I had my eyes closed in meditation, but also for, you know, the rest of the day. You know, like, what do we do? The hours that we're not meditating, are we really living a spiritual life? Are we treating each other kindly? Are we being egotistical and arrogant? Which is, I find a lot of that in various pockets of the spirituality movement or human potential movement or New Age or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of arrogance. There's a lot of, oh, you know, my way is better than your way, or I have the only way, or really you have to go through me to get there. That type of thing. And what I teach people now is really that we all have the ability to go direct, to experience the divine presence ourselves, to heal ourselves, to use methods that will help us in a practical way in our everyday life, and we don't have to join a cult in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, your first book that really did kind of break through and create a presence for you, when you were writing Divine Revelation, did you feel like there was a flow that you were engaging in where you were bringing through a lot of higher insights so that you could kind of alter that old vision of what spirituality was?
Absolutely, absolutely, Chris, I did. And in fact, what happened was, with every one of the books that I've written, I just allow spirit as much as possible, Spirit with a capital S, to move through me, to work through me, to write through me, and to bring through the wisdom, highest wisdom at that time. And certainly I believe that much of the information in the books that I've written, and I have 8 books in print now, much of that is divinely inspired. Or when I say divinely inspired, I mean coming from our own inner wisdom, from my own inner wisdom, from the highest wisdom within.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, as you were developing your writing technique and bringing, you know, very important information through, you were also painting. And tell us a little bit about your artistic expressions.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've always been an artist. I've been an artist since I was a child. Everybody's an artist when they're a child. Some people just continue and don't stop. And so I really was specialized in art. I even went to art college. And so my books are illustrated. I do all the illustrations for the books. Some of them are more elaborately illustrated than others. One of my latest books, called Ascension, has a lot of illustrations in it, a lot of paintings that I had done. Another book that I had done, called Exploring Chakras, that also has a tremendous amount of illustrations in it. So I really enjoy doing artwork. I even enjoy creating websites, frankly. Anything artistic is something that I find great pleasure in. I have a great aptitude for that, although I really enjoy writing as well.
Right. Well, now, when you're painting the various ascended masters, do you feel like you're getting an exposure, a revelation from them? In other words, are they perhaps posing in your mind's eye for that experience?
Actually, they are. In fact, the paintings in my book Ascension were all visions that I had. I mean, when I say visions that I had, it's not like every single detail of the picture was part of that vision. Obviously, I used artistic techniques in it. I used inspiration in it, different ways of doing the light and so on. But in fact, they were all visions in my mind that I got. And so that's how I saw these divine beings, and that's how I painted them. You know, I mean, there's three basic ways of receiving divine inspirations or divine impressions. One is through visions, one is through feelings, and another is through words. So there's three basic ways: clairvoyance, clairaudience, and clairsentience.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like there's a presence around you when you're working with, you know, doing a painting? In other words, is it more than just an interior process? Do you feel like there is a manifestation around you at the same time?
Well, yes. In fact, when you are painting, or when I am painting a divine being, of course, that divine being is present, and I'm invoking the divine being at the same time. So there's a powerful connection that gets created, and that's why it's powerful to paint pictures of deities or divine beings, because you're going to receive the blessings and the grace that come from that divine being.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let's go all the way back where Suzanne was a little girl. Where did you grow up? And before the big adventures, international adventures, started to occur, what was your childhood like?
I had a very quite normal childhood. I lived in Denver, Colorado. Certainly no exposure whatsoever to Eastern philosophy, Eastern wisdom, anything out of the ordinary. Went to school, was very, very diligent in school, got straight A's, you know, graduated first in my class and so on. I mean, I was just a normal person who was very studious, frankly.
Mm-hmm. And
I always enjoyed art. Art was my favorite subject in school, and art and English were my favorite subjects.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I grew up in Colorado also and had parallel interests, so synchronicity definitely is propelling our discussion here.
Absolutely.
Well, then the big explosion of love, peace, and hippiness happened primarily on the West Coast. Was that what drew you out to the Bay Area?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I wanted to be a hippie. I was, you know, my aspiration was to be a hippie. So I was. I became one.
Mm-hmm. But before Woodstock, you started your international activities. Is that correct?
Well, let's see. Woodstock was what year? 1969?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did not go to India until 1969.
Ah.
Because I tried to go several times, but they wouldn't let me go because they said I was too young. They kept sending my application back and saying, no, can't go.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you landed in India, did you find there was an awakening memory? Did you feel like you had spent time there in previous lifetimes?
I have had memories of being in India in previous lifetimes, as a matter of fact, and remember myself as a sadhu with, you know, wearing the robes and on the banks of the Ganges and that sort of thing. So, yes, in fact, I have had memories, and I've been to India several times in this lifetime. In fact, I just returned from India. I was at this huge festival there called the Kumbh Mela. It happens once every 12 years. So I just returned.
Interesting. And have you processed and come to a conclusion the changes that have happened with this globalization of the internet? I'm sure India has felt the impression of, you know, this communication transformation.
Well, India has really changed because of the whole entire IT world. They're one of the leaders in the IT world, and they're being hired all over the world for their expertise in that area. And because of that, India is becoming quite a completely different country. I mean, it's very much more prosperous than it used to be. It's more orderly, more organized, you know, much more Western in its way it faces West more now, which I don't know if that's so great, but it is what's happening, and definitely becoming very Westernized.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, of all of the different journeys that you have embarked upon, what country or what environment do you feel like has left the most visceral impression in your mind? Was it
India,
or was
obviously it has to be India, you know, it has to be India, and it has to be events such as the Kumbh Mela, which are so extraordinary, where you have millions, literally millions of people gathered together for the purpose of spiritual awakening, for the purpose of purification and meeting with the great holy people of India. I mean, these types of events have tremendous impression on me. And so, obviously, India has definitely made the greatest impression on me.
Mm-hmm. And then second to that, was it outside this country or inside this country where you feel like you had another significant experience as far as your own alignment?
Well, to tell you the truth, I really enjoy traveling very much, and I have a little travel company. I take people on sacred journeys to a lot of different places. Let's see, some of the places I really enjoy, I may mention, I really like Mount Shasta. I like the Tetons. I like the desert areas of this country. I really like Machu Picchu, Peru. I'm very entranced by Tikal in Guatemala. I, of course, love India. I love Switzerland. I lived there with my guru for many, many years. Switzerland's a gorgeous country. There's beauty in every country. I mean, you can find beautiful areas and beautiful sacred places everywhere. You just have to seek them out and find them.
Right. Well, now, as this process of awakening appears to be continuing to move forward, do you feel like the Mayan calendar, the 2012 cycle, has in fact had a global impression, that it has actually been a period of some significant shift?
I do believe that it is, as a matter of fact, because I, at that time, on December 21st, 2012, I had a special event, which was a cruise, where we went down to Machu Picchu and other areas of the Maya world, and what I experienced on that day of the solstice, experienced something quite extraordinary, and that was a connection with the deity that the Maya believe in, which is called Hunapu, which is the central sun, the center of the entire universe, the center of the Milky Way. And so that being, really, it's a divine being, or a god, or I don't know what you want to call it, but it is a divine being in the very center of the Milky Way, which I connected with, and it has such a gentle and soft feeling to it. It was the sweetest, most gentle experience, and I was quite taken by that because I was expecting some big power, you know, I mean, the center of the universe, for goodness sake. You would think that would be really all-powerful, you know, like this big thing. But it was just this sweet and soft and gentle energy that came, and I could feel that it was that we were really aligning to that energy on that date, and that it was very accessible on that date for us to experience Hunapu, and it was really powerful in a very soft and sweet, beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, for people who are trying to parallel your experiences, who are looking in your direction saying, oh, I want to do that, I want to feel that, I want to become part of that process, what is the first step, as far as you're concerned, that people have to stop and address?
I think the first step is to learn how to meditate. First step is to go within and get quiet and still and centered within yourself and learn how to listen to the inner voice, learn how to receive divine inner guidance, learn how to have experiences of the divine presence by getting quiet within, by taking some deep breaths, by allowing, by letting go. And you know, in order to do that, and meditation is the key for all of that.
Mm-hmm. And how about for parents? Do you feel like parents should direct their children in that path of becoming a meditative person, or do you think that that's something that a person should discover on their own in their journey through life?
I think the most important thing for parents to do is to allow their children to have their experiences. Quite often, parents deny the child's experience. The child might be talking about a so-called imaginary being who's not really imaginary at all. It's, in fact, a divine being that they're communicating with. So I would say that it's a good idea for parents to encourage the child's imagination and also to encourage their real experiences. I mean, they're having experiences, and to allow them to have those experiences, to not say, oh, that's just your imagination, oh, that's not real, you know, and sort of quelching their natural spiritual gift, but encourage their spiritual gift. Give them activities that develop their spiritual gifts. Sitting in front of the TV and playing with video games is not going to help them to develop those spiritual gifts. Playing outside, playing with other kids, playing by themselves a lot, taking time by themselves outside to play and that sort of thing, that's what really helps children to develop their spirituality. Well, they have it naturally, to allow them to express it naturally.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, the next book after meditation, you were exploring chakras. And do you feel like chakra balancing and examining your energetic field is another key component to this awakening process?
I believe that learning about the energy field and how to heal and cleanse it is definitely really, really important. Learning about chakras specifically, I don't really think is a top priority on a person's list unless they feel really drawn towards that.
Mm-hmm.
The books that I have written are mostly about developing meditation, intuition, listening to the inner voice, learning how to pray, how to heal, how to use affirmative prayer, how to use different methods of speaking the word to create your reality, to change your life, to create a better life for yourself. These are the types of things that I mostly write about. I also wrote that book, Ascension, which is about physical immortality and about beings who live forever. And that's a fascinating book and a very interesting subject as well. I wouldn't really place chakras as number one on the list of things unless, you know, if you have a real interest towards that, especially if you're in the healing field, for example, then you'd probably be interested in chakras. My book on chakras has been reviewed as being the ultimate book that's ever been written on the chakras. That's because what I did is I went back to the ancient scriptures of India and found the most authentic information that I could find about the chakras. And then what I did is I received revelations about it and about how the human energy field parallels with the energy field of the entire universe. So it's kind of, it's like a really far-out cosmic book. It's fun to read if you're real kind of intelligent. It's fun to read. It's kind of hard to follow if you don't. I mean, it's really very deep, put it that way, and very advanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, as you've been developing all these different themes, of course, we also end up looking at prayer as being the way that humankind reaches out and tries to gain access to the ear and mind of God. What is the fundamental point, I would say, I would ask you about the process of prayer?
Well, okay, there's just one word. It all boils down to one word. That word is ask. That's the word, ask. Ask and it shall be given unto you. So in order to receive anything, in order to have any even spiritual experience, no matter what it is in your life, you must ask for it. And when I say ask, I'm not saying beg and plead. It's more of affirm. Affirm means claim. Claim it, affirm it. Know that it is yours. For example, if you want to have a spiritual experience, you simply ask for it. You call upon the name of the deity or divine being that you wish to experience, then you just ask for that experience. It's not really rocket science. In fact, meditation is also about asking. And it's so simple. All you have to do is you just sit down in a chair, you close your eyes, you take a few deep breaths, you get quiet and still and centered and balanced within yourself. And then the big secret is that you ask. You ask. Ask a question, ask for guidance, ask for inspiration, ask a divine being to come and give you an experience. Ask for whatever it is that you wish to experience. And then you take another deep breath, and then you do what I call the do-nothing program. That means do nothing, nothing is less than nothing. And then the still small voice within will speak to you, will give you guidance, will give you inspiration, healing. You'll receive your answer through clairvoyance, clairaudience, or clairsentience. And those are big fat words that simply mean seeing, hearing, and feeling.
Nice. Well, I know that the idea of doing nothing is a central element in the Course in Miracles. One of the significant affirmations from the Course is, I need do nothing. So you feel like that's really the kind of a foundation that we have to build on, is to stop our doing, stop our busy.
The thing is, that's actually a quote from Jesus, I need do nothing. The Father within me does the work through me. That's what Jesus said. And in fact, it's about surrendering. It's about letting go and allowing yourself to be led by Spirit, with a capital S. When you allow yourself to be led by Spirit, you're no longer led by your ego. You're led by your higher self, the aspect of yourself that is divine, that is sublime, that is the truth. When you let yourself be led by the truth, by your inner wisdom, rather than by your idea of what you think you are, or what you think your ego thinks or your mind thinks, then you'll find that your life will take on new meaning and new tenor. You'll begin to live your true divine purpose, divine plan, divine destiny. You'll start to have synchronous experiences. You'll be in the right place at the right time. The right people will show up. You'll start to live really a magical, mystical kind of life, where you're no longer in the sense of struggle and pain and suffering and all of that. Instead, you're living in a life that is of ease, of greater comfort, where it's as if you're rowing down the river, just easy, effortless, no effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, ego is an interesting subject, because there was a stampede in the 90s in the direction of defeating the ego and almost dismembering it. And then now, as we're moving into especially the last 3 years, it seems that a lot of different schools of thought are saying, embrace and love your ego so that you can tame it. What are your thoughts about the ego and how we should approach it?
Ego is simply not real. It's simply an illusion. It does not really exist. It's an identification with something false. You see, if you go up to somebody and you say, well, who are you? The person will first identify themselves. Oh, I'm so-and-so, with their name. I am this height, this weight, I have these eyes, I have these children, I have this home, I have this car, I have this job, I have this history, I have this education. And they'll identify themselves with these things. And these things are not who that person truly is. They are simply the history, simply our history. Who we truly are is a divine spiritual being that is not identified with things of this world. The things of this world are not who we are. So if we can discover who we truly are, then we will no longer identify ourselves as who we think we are. Who we think we are is what I call the ego. I mean, someone else might call it something else. I mean, ego is a word that can be defined in many ways. But who we really are is the inner divinity, is the divine being within us. That's who we truly are.
Mm-hmm.
And we can discover that.
So the physical body, the corporeal experience that we're having, would be a collection of ideas about identity. Would that be the best way to identify the ego and the physical representation it manifests?
The mind, the body, you know, not mm-hmm. spirit. It's the mind and the body. That is how people identify themselves. They identify themselves mostly with body and also with the mind, you know. Mm-hmm. I have this amount of intelligence. I know these things. I have these beliefs in my mind. And then also I look like this. And I have this education, so obviously all these smart ideas are stuck in my brain. And you know, but that's not who we really are. When you actually meditate and experience who you really are, then you know that the ego is not who you really are. And as you meditate more and more, you begin to identify with your higher self rather than with the ego. Higher self is not the ego. It is wholeness. It's oneness. It is perfect, whole and complete. It is absolutely content. It is unbounded, immeasurable. It is beauteous. It is without end. Eternal, has no end, no beginning. It never dies. It's immortal. That's who we really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, and as we're kind of moving along on this theme here, so the ego has manifested in the physical body something unpleasant, cancer or heart disease or brain tumor, whatever, and that leads us in the direction of your latest book, Instant Healing. So how do we resolve these manifestations that we allow the ego to bring forth in the human body?
Right. In fact, it is our subconscious mind that creates everything.
Mm-hmm.
That it's our subconscious mind that manifests the events in our life, the manifestation physically, mentally, in our life. It is all driven by our beliefs. In other words, it is done unto you according to your belief. And also, I'll make one other quote here, and that is from Lord Buddha in the very first chapter of the first verse of the first chapter of the Dhammapada, which is the most important scripture in Buddhism. Lord Buddha says, "All that we are is the result of what we have thought. If a person speaks or acts with a pure thought, then happiness follows them. If a person speaks or acts with an impure thought, then unhappiness follows them." So in that verse, Buddha is telling us that we create our own reality, our own destiny through our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. So that is how we create every moment of our life, and that's how we can create everything, all manifestations in the body, whether that's physical problems or good health, ill health, whether that is something in the mind. All of that is created by thoughts, words, and deeds, and also our environment, the kind of environment we live in, the people we attract. All of this is created by thoughts, words, and deeds. So because of that, because we're creating it, the good news is that we can change it. So it's possible for us to change our mind or be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and you can transform yourself through speaking the words of truth, speaking words of truth rather than speaking lies, speaking false things. So, I mean, if, for example, if you go around all the time saying, "Oh, I'm so poor, I'm so poor, I'm so poor, I'm so poor, I never have any money, I'm always poor," if you continue to speak like that and think like that all the time, then you're just going to outpicture or manifest or demonstrate. Those words all mean the same thing. You're going to demonstrate poverty. But if you change your mind through changing your patterns of speech, changing your thoughts, changing your actions, then you will manifest something better. You'll manifest more wealth. That's not to say that there's anything wrong with being poor, but if you want to change, you can change. You know, you don't have to. You don't have to become wealthy, certainly. You don't even have to become moderately wealthy. It's fine. If you're happy and content as you are, that's just fine. But if you want to change, you can do that. So the types of things that I offer in the book Instant Healing, my latest book, are two basic types of prayers. One is called a short affirmative prayer, and the other is called a prayer treatment, which is a longer prayer. And both of those types of things are in the book Instant Healing, and there's 243 of these in this book, 243 prayers for all occasions that help people to change their mind instantly. That's why I call it Instant Healing. For example, in chapter 1 would be gaining inner strength and empowerment. Chapter 2 would be healing emotions and deep-seated beliefs. Chapter 3, healing and forgiving relationships, and so on. And then you go to some of the later chapters, and you're even doing things like in chapter 11, living in perfect health, chapter 12, magnetizing love, chapter 13, attracting prosperity, and so on. So there are many chapters, there's a total of 17 chapters and 243 of these different types of prayers. The person can just go to the appendix, look up whatever problem they seem to be having in their life at the time, and then just go to that page and read the prayer aloud and continue to read it from time to time until the change comes about. And that's important, that you don't just, okay, I'm going to read this once and then I'll never do it again. But you're going to get an instant healing. Instantly, you're going to have a change. Your mind is going to change from doing this. Your emotions are going to change. You'll immediately feel a lot better, and you'll be lifted, and you'll feel different. And with some of these, if it's something like manifesting a new home or something, well, that might take a little while to actually manifest the home, and you just continue to pray for it until it happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what has been your feedback with this book? Are you starting to get people sending you letters and emails about how they have received instant results from...
They actually have, yeah. Amazingly, they say that they resolved issues instantaneously, and it was quite extraordinary for them. So I'm happy to receive some good feedback already.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
That leads me to another kind of ambiguous zone in a lot of spiritual metaphysical thought. We've got this idea of past lives and timelines, mm-hmm. and the illusion of time.
Right.
What do you believe about, or what are your thoughts about past lives and how much they influence the current life?
Well, I believe that we do have past lives. Obviously, I remember some of my past lives, so I believe in them. And I do believe that when Buddha said all that we are is a result of what we have thought, and that our thoughts, words, and deeds create our reality, create our destiny, I do believe that that's not just from this life, it's from past lives as well. So if we have a certain belief in one life, it carries on into the next life until that belief changes, you know. So we'll continue to manifest from lifetime to lifetime certain things, until we change those things, and then something else manifests. So we really are creating our own destiny through every thought, every word, every deed, throughout every lifetime. And that's why sometimes people don't understand, well, why would somebody be born this way or that way, or why would somebody have this burden that they're carrying even as a young child? Well, because they carried it over from some past life. There's a lot of things that make a lot of sense when you believe in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, as far as specific things, do you have to go back and identify a past life experience in order to resolve a current life issue?
Yes, you can do that. As a matter of fact, in my book Divine Revelation, and I also believe in my book How to Hear the Voice of God, I have a past life regression kind of exercise where you can get in touch with the problem that you're having in this life and then go back and experience the first time you ever had that problem and remember that from a past life, and then by remembering it, it automatically heals it. You can also say a little affirmation prayer that I provide to help you to resolve that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now this puts a huge amount of responsibility in the hands of the individual instead of victimhood and feeling like we just have to, you know, bear the burden of our circumstance in life. You're suggesting that we can control the conditions that we experience in life and that we can transform our life. Is that the core teaching that you're trying to share with people?
I do believe in free will, Chris. Yes, I think that people can change their lives. And it may be challenging to do that, because if you have a deep pattern from many, many lifetimes and you're carrying that pattern over and over and over again, it's not easy to change. I'm not saying this is easy, but I am saying that we can change and that we can change our minds instantly. It's possible for us to change instantly through using affirmative prayer and then gradually change the deeper problems, you know. I mean, for example, if you're just in a bad mood or something, you can instantly change yourself into a good mood. There's a lot of things that you can do very, very much instantly. You could, for example, cut psychic ties with another person instantly. You could heal your negative thoughts instantly. You can heal the environment around you, the space around you, the energies in the environment instantly. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do really, really quickly. There are other things that are deep-seated beliefs, deep-seated patterns that we have carried from lifetime to lifetime that cause deep-seated problems. And those take longer to heal. But we can work on those, and we can make improvements, and it's worthwhile doing that. Really, it depends on what kind of quality of life a person wants to live. You know, do you want to continue just in kind of a humdrum, semi-depressed way, or do you want to live a more glorious life? Do you want to really fulfill your destiny? Do you want to walk the divine path? Do you want to fulfill your true mission, your divine plan, your divine purpose, that which you came on earth to do? You can get in touch with that, and you can begin to really manifest that in your life, which will be a very profound, profound and meaningful life to live.
Mm-hmm. And how about, our current society, we're all of a sudden there is this awakened interest in all these different modalities, like astrology, tarot card reading, runes, things of that sort. Do you think those tools are important tools along the spiritual journey, or can a person just kind of glide through and not indulge in all of these different approaches that are out there floating around on the internet?
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe, Chris, that if somebody is interested in that, if they feel drawn to that they should pursue that. You know, if that's of interest to them, they can learn things about themselves through different modalities, whatever that may be, I Ching or astrology or runes or, you know, even consulting with a psychic advisor or whatever. I mean, people can learn more about themselves. I believe that the greatest learning comes from within, though, and that's the most advanced learning, is finding the truth from within, asking questions of your higher self and receiving the answers yourself. And that is, you know, I really depend much more on that than I would on anyone else or anything else.
Mm-hmm. And how about upcoming adventures? What have you got scheduled, and where can people discover you in cyberspace?
Oh, okay. Well, I have a couple of websites. One is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. And then I also have a travel site for my sacred travels. For example, we have some things coming up this year. I'm going to Peru in June, going to the crop circles of England in July, And other things will be coming up as I get them up on the website. I usually do cruises, spiritual cruises, sometimes spiritual retreats. So those are at divinetravels.com. That's D-I-V-I-N-E, divine, travels, that's a plural word, Divine Travels, TRAVELS.com.
Mm-hmm. And how about books? Are you working on another book, or are you just going to kind of float for a while?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Chris, Instant Healing just came out, and that's available right now. You can get it on my website at drsusan.org. You can get it at amazon.com, at barnesandnoble.com. You can get it in your local bookstore. If they don't have it, you can order it. And also, I have two other books coming out this year in the fall catalog of my publisher. There's two new books coming out. I'm going to be reissuing two of my books. One is Exploring Chakras, and the other one is Exploring Auras. I don't know what the titles will be yet, but they'll obviously have my name on them. And they'll be a new edition of the Chakra book and the Auras book.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, they're both coming out this year in the fall.
Well, it was great being able to have a chat with you here, and I'll be following all of your adventures that you're posting in cyberspace, and look forward to doing a catch-up interview maybe in another 6 months so we can see how the progression of this big shift is going.
Well, I certainly would love to do that. It's been an absolute pleasure, and
yes,
I think you're a fantastic interviewer. I loved all the questions you asked. They were very insightful and much deeper than most people ask.
Well, thank you ever so much. Yes, I'm trying to get people to look deeply within, like you are and all the rest of us who are in collaboration with higher consciousness.
Well, you're certainly doing a fantastic job.
Great. Well, you have a fabulous week, and like I said, I'll get in touch with you for a catch-up interview a little bit down the road here, and you can give us the latest, inspirations and insights and shares.
Well, thank you.
Thanks again, Susan.